A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
It's a very unenviable position to be in as a Chelsea fan. You can't defend it, and you can't defend what's gone on. You can't defend any of it. And so whatever you say, it doesn't matter how bad you're feeling about it, people are going to say, well, it's not as bad as a war, and they're absolutely right.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
What can you say?
No.
I think fans are developing a siege mentality. You know, a lot of them saying, oh, why are the other fans so gleeful about this? Well, that's what you'd do if it was City. You'd do exactly the same thing. It's
yes.
What drives football supporting. It's schadenfreude.
Yeah.
Other fans are delighted about it. Other fans would love to see Chelsea go out of business completely, you know. And so they're going to have their moment where they take the mickey. I don't think cheering his name is helpful at the moment. I really don't.
But we just heard Fletch say that the club asking for that not to happen. But, you know, the other thing that football fans do, apart from schadenfreude, is double down.
Yeah.
And I would have fully expect them to be singing his name again at the weekend.
They will. I just think it's, I think he would have sold the club. He wouldn't have taken any money out of it. I think he would have done exactly what he said he was going to do. And I think the thing would have gone through. But the government decided to make it official, fine. But I think they've got to let the club be sold. Otherwise, you know, the club will go out of business.
You've just spoken off air to Simon Jordan, and he's pretty well connected. And he should have allayed some of your fears, because he did yesterday,
but
as he did on air.
Any fan would be worried. It's not a great position to be in, is it? You know, it isn't. And so some of the things are very draconian. I mean, shutting the club shop, I'm not sure what that does. You know, it's not like Roman pops in for the petty cash. You're just going to hurt the people that work there. I think you've got to do things that hurt him, not the people who work for Chelsea.
We did talk about this yesterday with Kieran Maguire, that effectively the club could have still kept earning revenue, and that revenue would then go into a pot of money that he sees none of, but is there to hopefully benefit some of the victims in Ukraine.
Well, that's what Gab Marcotti said, you know. Sell the, you know, if Chelsea do progress in the Champions League, there's no point playing in front of an empty Stamford Bridge. It just hurts the fans who've done nothing here. You know, sell the tickets and give the money to the Ukrainian refugee effort. I think that's much more sensible thing to do than to say, well, we're not selling any tickets.
You did get that sense yesterday, because you did see a bit of movement in what the government was saying, certainly around the £20,000 traveller allowance. As we were saying to Kieran yesterday, it's completely unprecedented. You've got nowhere to go. So they come up with this ruling. It's pretty easy with all the other oligarchs because they don't own a football club and all the knock-on effect of that.
I told you, Chelsea are a nice low-hanging fruit and high profile. So, you know, that's why they're being punished in this way.
I don't think you can look at his situation as an oligarch with the others there and say, well, they're making an example of him more than they're making an example of any of the others.
No.
But they're not.
Tuchel's in a good position. He's in the best position of any Chelsea manager in the past 20 years.
Yeah.
But he can't be sacked.
Well, I mean...
he's done well. He's really spoke well and, you know...
I think a lot of people have been suggesting that it shouldn't just be down to him to be front and centre. You're hearing nothing from upstairs. You're hearing nothing from the board.
No,
So, he's been slightly hung out of dry, Thomas Tuchel, being the spokesman for this. So, anyway, let's have a look...
I suppose so, but then if you are somebody like Bruce Buck, you're so associated with him, so that's not easy either. Matthew Syed has accused Chelsea fans as being an unpaid army of Russian bots. I think that is absolutely ludicrous. Any fans of any club given this opportunity to have this 18-19 year period would have grasped it, would have taken it, and aren't that. You know, they're just not that. They're just football fans who love their club and didn't bother to question where the money came from. Fine. I mean, they didn't, and so, you know, but
they suffer the consequences of that now.
They're suffering the consequences now. They're not unpaid Russian bots, are they? You know, they're really not.
Anyway, let's have a look at the football last night, because I think there was a couple of seismic results yesterday evening, especially Leeds Villa. That was a bit of a shocker, wasn't it, really?
It's terrible. I think
people were expecting more, and they are right in it, Leeds. That and the Everton results at Tottenham this week are real proper red flags.
That's a classic mistake the Leeds board made. I mean, this doesn't matter whoever comes in, it never works there. And I think sticking with Bielsa and letting him get some players back would have been a much better idea.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Phillips and Cooper are that far off, are they? Bamford got on last night.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you do feel that it could have been different. Had he, and I don't think it would have been in this situation had those three stayed fit. But
looks like Watford and Norwich had done, doesn't it?
Pretty comfortable for you last night, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it was 2-1. You made a slightly hard work of it, but then once the third went in,
miss
that
a lot
was
of
it.
Chances and all that, as
and yeah, and a weird old night. I don't know if Roy has told our old mate Ben Foster to play out from the back. It seemed last night that the decision was made just to kind of keep it on the floor. But yeah, it slightly backfired for
it
him.
It did. It was a poor result as well.
Was a poor result.
And the cricket, I mean, it's just, you know, honestly, so dispiriting as well. The hopeless they are, really. I've never seen a less penetrating England attack than, you know, I mean, that boy played well. Bonner, he did, you know, he batted with great concentration. I mean, 355 balls, but I mean, you know, Joe Root's overuse of Mark Woods has caused an injury. He should call his holiday home Dunwoodin.
Yes,
really.
Nice. Yeah. And did you like the Guimaraes goal? Were you impressed with that? The old volleyed back heel?
Yes, I told you. Last week, I saw him at Brentford a couple of weeks ago when he came on. I thought, yeah, he's obviously a really good player. He played a couple of lovely passes. And, it'll be an interesting game, the Battle of the Pariahs on Sunday.
Yes. And he's got... But the good thing is, though, he's got Manager of the Month, Eddie Howe, today, isn't he? So you know what normally happens after that. You'll go and give him a shoe.
That'll be a tough game, I think. They're playing well.
They are playing well. They've got a head of steam up. But I wonder... Max Rushton has his Sinclair Spectrum, doesn't he, for overhead kicks?
Yeah.
Wonder where what he does for. What's he got for back heels? You don't see many volleyed back heels. We'll have to see where that one fits. But
I see Ian, the judge in the boxing, Ian John Lewis. He's been downgraded. Is he going to have a closing downside?
I think he is. Never knowingly underscored. Unknowingly underscored, though, clearly.
Yeah,
so he'll just go and do a few hall fights. I mean, how bad does he have to be that he starts doing bare knuckle and stuff like that? But that's what they do. This has happened before. That's what happens. It's very similar to football referees. You know, give you a couple of games in League Two. And
I always think that's unfair.
Yeah, I think it's unfair on League Two managers. And we don't want them stinking the place out. Why are you sending them down here like we're some kind of punishment?
Talking of Schadenfreude, I did enjoy PSG going out. See, everybody does it.
Yeah.
It's in their DNA, isn't it? It's brilliant, isn't it, the way they do that every year?
Yeah, it was a shocker. Julian Laurent still shell-shocked when we spoke to him yesterday. Well done to Leicester. Do you like to see them stick it to Rennes in the first leg? I hope they can finish it in the second leg. Of course, Rennes not quite so good when you actually have to play the games in Europe. Well done, Brendan and the boys. And good result for Rangers. That was a sensational performance.
Very good. I watched a bit of that.
And West Ham, as the Moose was saying to us yesterday, just wants to go back to their place with the tie still alive. And they had good chances early on, didn't they?
Yeah.
Could have come away with a draw, but 1-0 is not too bad, I would say, especially as we got no away goals. So a decent night all round.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist
specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
It's 2:03, so England will be start their innings at 2:13. We've got a sweepstake going. Joe Root in by 2:20.
You're going, let's have a look. No, I think Joe Root will be in by, I'm going to go 2:35. You're going when?
2:20.
2:20. So you're giving our opening batsmen about 7 minutes.
7 minutes and time for the first over.
Any more takers next door? Look at the producer. Sorry, 2:40. Very optimistic, our producer. Bill on the deck. So we got a time for 27. 2:27. Okay, fair enough. And Jamie, our assistant producer, what are you going for? What's 2:15? What, 2 minutes?
That's a first baller.
That's not good, is it? So little faith in our cricket.
What a surprise.
Very poor. Anyway, Andy Zaltzman will be here to preside over an England collapse. And yes, the cricket statistician and comedian is popping in to see us a little bit later on.
I'm finally enjoying a lovely cup of tea in my TalkSport mug, beautiful old-fashioned China mug, which is a lot better than the new mugs that we've got. I've never seen anything like this. It keeps the tea so hot that you burn your hand even an hour later.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit something unnatural.
I think this set of mugs they've given us, they're like heat conductors.
Yeah.
So you can't physically hold them with your hand. These were a job lot from one of the apprentice teams, don't you think?
I think so.
This week, says Lord Sugar, we're going to be making mugs. Everybody wants mugs now. Nobody wants disposable stuff. And this was like whichever team it was came up with these mugs.
The mug. It tasted disgusting.
Take the skin off
your hands. I don't know who bought those, but anyway, it was a mistake.
Now, what was I going to say to you? It will come back to me. Go on, carry on. In the meantime, until I think of it, you may have something else for us.
You see, the England wives and girlfriends are to stay on a cruise ship for the World Cup.
Oh, right.
Or booze ship, as it's more likely to be, let's be honest.
Yeah. That sounds nice. Where will that be? Do you know where it's going to be moored?
Yes, off Doha.
Oh, sorry, the World Cup. You're talking about football. Cricket. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, football you're talking about, not
football.
Cricket.
Yes.
Don't make it even more complicated. Count Arthur Jacobs. For goodness sake.
I'm confused.
Okay, yeah, a lot of the TalkSport listeners will be going to that World Cup. They'll be staying on cruise ships as well because they've said they don't want to build lots of
We'll
hotels.
Probably be on a pedalo.
Lots of white elephant hotels. That's it. Fantastic. We'll be rowing into shore every day, if selected, quite possibly. Now, the TalkSport mug you're drinking from there.
Yes.
Occasionally beautiful. When I see somebody sipping from one of those, I think somewhere in Hollywood, Ron Howard is making his new film. And he's sipping from his TalkSport mug because he came in to see us, didn't he, when Rush came out, the James Hunt, Nicky Lauder film, and he came into the studio and he had a cup of tea while we were chatting. Well, he's a lovely guy, wasn't he?
Very nice man.
And he said, I love these TalkSport mugs. Can I take one? And
I think he's got a TalkSport 2 mug now.
Head of mugs. We had to wrestle Callum to the ground because I think he wanted to charge him £5 for it.
He did.
But in the end, we managed to give him a freebie.
Bill as he
we said, look, it's Ron Howard. He's you know, he's a Bollywood film. He just wants to be, he'll tell all his friends. Yeah. There'll be loads of orders coming in from the likes of the John Hams of this world.
Yeah, the Fonz.
And the Kirsten Dunsties of this world.
Henry Winkler.
Yeah, they'll all be getting in touch. But anyway, I don't know if they ever did sell more off the back of it, but somewhere in Hollywood, there's a man drinking from a TalkSport mug.
I've got one for you from the Royal Column, the Society column in the Times.
Yeah.
The Duke of Gloucester, patron of the Richard III Society.
Is that in London? Fantastic.
I hope not.
Or the England cricket team, as they're now known, of course. Yeah. I don't think I'd want to be in any London thing called the Richard III Society.
It's would not be, ideal, is it?
Wouldn't really? Be good. What do they do then?
I've no idea. He received Mr. Matthew Lewis, chairman. I've no idea. I only put it in for that cheap joke.
Okay, I want to find out. Look, you know, you throw this stuff about, but none of us know. Well, let's have a look. The Richard III Society. It must be something. I mean, yeah. I don't know what they do. They sort of moan about winter, do they? Yeah. The Richard III Society. Let's have a look. What sort of work they get up to?
Probably interested in the car park.
Richard
III. Leicester.
Welcome to the website, the Richard III Society. Blah, blah, blah. We've been working since 1924 to secure a more balanced assessment of the king and support research. Oh, so it's like they think he got a bad press.
Did he? Oh, yeah.
He got a bad press. I'm going to join the Henry VII Society. Fantastic. And go along and trash the name of Richard III. But, yeah, that's right. So that's what they do. They go out there. I mean, to be honest, I mean, it's a good thing, but Richard III is not going to get any benefit out of it. I mean, he doesn't.
Not really, no.
Well, look, thanks ever so much for your support, guys, but, you know, I'm long dead. In a car park in Leicester.
Yes, basically.
Yeah, that's right.
And don't know if you ever read Alex James from Blur. He's become a sort of cheesemonger and not expert.
A cheesemonger?
Well, he's a cheesemaker.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
a cheesemonger.
Yeah, he's been on the show with us before. Yes. That's right, yeah, with his that's fine right. music that and food music. Show. He
yeah,
does,
exactly.
He?
But he's got some funny ideas about food. He's been writing about, because there's been a controversy this week about roast dinners. I think there was a place in one of the pubs in around Britain served this roast dinner that was ridiculed. It didn't look particularly good. He's writing about roast dinners. His roast beef is the big one, utterly delicious. I agree with that totally. Yeah. He said, to make a joint go further, I'm all for adding side meats. Really?
Yeah. What's a side meat, Andy?
I don't know. Pigs in blankets with turkey. Well, that's nice, yeah. Spicy chunks of chorizo with chicken. But this one I don't get. Nobody will complain if you serve crispy smoky bacon with your Sunday roast. Ooh. Well, I think the moose would freshen up.
That's quite possibly.
It's a really nice idea, really.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Ten without loss, but only just England. Although you were saying it, I've not seen it, Andy. It wasn't out.
No, it was a poor decision by the umpires.
Okay,
one look told you it was going down the legs.
We all had a bit of a sweep earlier on here on the show. Andy thought, how long did you think?
I went 222.
Joe Root would be batting. The only two of us still alive in this at the moment. I'm not anymore. I said 235. Our producer who went 240. Joe Root would be batting by. We don't have a great deal of faith in the openers. Let's see if our next guest comedian. And seasoned cricket statistician Andy Zortzman does. Good afternoon, Andy.
Hi, how are you doing?
Well, if you joined the sweep before England started batting, where would you have gone with by which time Joe Root would be batting?
I'd have probably gone for something pretty similar, I think. So I would also have lost it. I mean, it's been a tough time for England's openers. I like to think that in many ways, England's cricket team have actually been performing a kind of long-form piece of satire over the winter. And they've sent out a warning to the world. We've seen how things have evolved this year. They sent out a warning throughout the tour of Australia through much of last summer and at times already in the West Indies that things can collapse very, very quickly indeed.
On those very rare occasions that they openers do put on a stand, I think there was one, you'll tell me, in the Ashes, there's normally a collapse as soon as there's a wicket. It doesn't really help.
Yeah, what is the high score by an England opening pair in living memory? Andy, is there any standouts that you can bring us?
There was a couple last year, but Burns and Hamid, certainly at Headingley, after they bowled India out for 70-odd, put on about 130 from memory. But the last few years have been sort of historically bad for England's openers. I mean, this is within the global trend of batting having been difficult generally over the last 5 or 6 years, although we're starting to see a few flatter pitches and bigger scores again. But yeah, it's been very very difficult, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that pitch in Pakistan must have been brilliant for your records. I mean, a lot of records must have fallen there. It was a mad test. I mean, if you want to turn people off test cricket, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, it was an absolutely terrible pitch. Between them, Pakistan and Australia had four of the top 15 ranked bowlers in the world. And yet only, was it 14 wickets fell in the game? There was a run out. Australia between them took just 3 wickets, one of their worst ever games. And they've played over 800 test matches. And you've got an outstanding bowling attack, one of their finest bowling attacks. And the pitch just totally and utterly neutralised them. So, I mean, we used to see quite a lot of those games sort of 10 or 15 years ago. And mercifully, they've become rarer and rarer. But this was an unwelcome return to that kind of scoreboard grinding cricket.
On the PR front, if England hadn't laboured the fact, if they just dropped a couple of notable players and just said, yeah, but they've been talking about, you know, this is a reset, this is a reboot. So they've dressed it up. And it reminds me of that bit in Spinal Tap where David St. Hubbins takes to the stage and says, this is a new birth of Spinal Tap, Jazz Odyssey. Derek Smalls, he wrote this, or in this case, Craig Over, and he bowled this. It does feel a bit like that. I think they've overpitched it a little bit.
Yes, I mean, it's not often you get the England cricket team compared to Spinal Tap, but I think this is entirely valid. They don't have quite the hair that Spinal Tap had in their glorious heyday, of course. It was curious. I would have thought the main priority would be just to try and get a victory, even a match victory, let alone a series victory. And I would have thought that Broad and Anderson would have been the best way to achieve that. I can also understand the extent to which they have to try and at last plan for the future. But at the same time, although Anderson and Broad are both old, they're also fit and they don't play a lot of cricket. So it's not like they're being worn out in the way that old cricketers were, just kind of grinding it out on the county circuit. They don't play one day cricket anymore. Both of them have had, you know, highly productive time since they became test specialists. Both their one day career sort of ended around about 2015. So, yeah, I mean, I think with sports science as it is, we see it in a lot of sports, particularly tennis, which is, you know, a highly physically attritional sport, players playing longer and longer, deep into their 30s. Roger Federer even going, you know, pretty strong up until his recent injury, ran about 40. So I would be surprised if Anderson doesn't have some time left in him. Having worked with him on Test Match Special a bit, I slightly get the feeling that he'd play until he was about 80 if he could.
So, yeah, I'm sure they'll be back in the summer when, you know.
I think there are some, I mean, there's a few people around them that, I mean, that doubt that they will get back in. I mean, and you wonder
if Wood and Archer were fit, you wouldn't need them because you'd have two fast bowlers.
Yeah, whether this does sort of drive them into the arms of commentary, because as you say, you know, you're standing there in an April afternoon, freezing cold drizzle, you know, at Trent Bridge. Stuart Broad might think, I'm not sure I want to carry on doing this.
He might go into music with his missus.
Yeah,
he could do. Tired as well. Yeah. Did you enjoy, do you like a sort of attritional effort like Nkrumah Bonner? 123 off 355 balls. That's quite a feat of concentration.
Yes, in the right context. I mean, I think it was a very good innings for the most part, and I thought maybe they were a little passive towards the end yesterday when they could have maybe tried to drive home the advantage a bit. But as it is, they got themselves into a good position where they're unlikely to lose and have a chance of forcing a victory. But I think broadly it was an outstanding innings. He's a nice player to watch, quite a sort of classical, elegant player who has come through late, as a number of West Indian players have. Shamar Brooks similarly had before he came back into the test side 2 or 3 years ago, had a sort of long and unproductive first class career. And it's quite interesting that we've seen that the scoring in West Indian first class cricket has been very low for quite a long time, but some of these batters are now starting to come through in their sort of late 20s and early 30s and having quite a productive time in test cricket.
Now you are touring at the moment, Andy, with your Setterist for Hire show.
I am.
And yes. you are in, where are we? Tonight you're in Birmingham, I see.
Yes, I am. I've just arrived in Birmingham. I'm playing the Glee Club tonight. Then next week I've got Cheltenham, Maidenhead, Aldershot and Nottingham from memory. So,
and Leicester. Yeah, you've got to never get Leicester on the Thursday.
Why are we seeing you at Cheltenham if you're in Cheltenham?
Yes. He can't make it during the day on Monday. And we're not going to, our paths aren't going to cross in Cheltenham, unfortunately. You had to get off on the road again rather than have a day's racing. Are you a racing man, Andy, or not?
I'm not, no. I've been... once, and I didn't get into it, to be honest, but I appreciate that you know, other people were. It's just not my cup of tea, to be honest.
Stats.
Quite a lot of stats in here.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know, are there?
You have the horse, his granddad and grandmother, who they were, and things like
that. Are there other sports? I mean, the thing is, you could make quite a lot of money from as a man who knows his stats, you know, and that could be quite
baseball
lucrative.
Baseball stats heavy because it's like cricket.
Of course it is. But in racing, it could be very lucrative for you, Andy. I don't know if cricket is. I don't know if your knowledge of stats. It's quite difficult to predict, though, isn't it, really?
Well, there's a difference between stats of things that have happened and predicting what is going to happen. My record is at best mixed. So,
how was Australia? Because you did get to go out there, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah, well, it was a curious time to be there. They sort of had a fairly significant COVID spike while we were there. There are a number of cases in the media crew. So it was a curious time to be there, but it was a kind of lifelong dream of mine to go and follow an Ashes tour. Ideally, there would have been more actual cricket because, I mean, some of those games really lasted a shamefully short amount of time. And in fact, the whole series was less than half as long as one of the Ashes, I think the 1924-25 really? Ashes series, when England still got hammered. But they at least gave people more days of cricket along the way.
Imagine if they were still doing 6 weeks on a boat to get there. They should have made them come back on the boat. That would have shown them, wouldn't it? Anyway, Andy, lovely to talk to you as always.
Thanks.
AndyZortzman.co.uk, all the details of the tour and where you can buy your tickets. And we will catch up with you soon. Enjoy the rest of the test.
Great, thanks very much. Cheers.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
A pretty respectable 3 minutes past three before Joe Root ventured out to bat. So I think we probably would have taken that.
Honestly.
Anyway, clips of the week coming up in the final hour. But that music, of course, signals the arrival of squad number nine, Martin Kellner, with his week of sport on TV. Good afternoon, Martin.
Good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, Paul. Yeah. Starting on a programme that, well, you two will know the author of this programme. It's Frank Skinner on Muhammad Ali.
Wow.
It's on the BBC iPlayer. It expires March the 30th, so you've got a couple of weeks to watch this. And it's terrific, it really is. I mean, it's as much about Frank as it is about Muhammad Ali. And those, when Muhammad Ali was still Cassius Clay in the 1960s, and Frank Skinner was a little boy in his house in Oldbury. You know, his dad would wake him up in the middle of the night and say, come on, it's time for the Cassius Clay fight. It was those fights against Liszt and everything. And he talks a lot about his father, what these days would be called father and son bonding. It wasn't in those days. But talks about a little kitchen in his house in Oldbury and sitting there listening to the boxing on the radio. And then goes on a journey to famous places associated with Muhammad Ali, which, you know, it's great. The thing is, often you see travelogues on the telly, and these days it's usually a comedian or an actor who goes on the journey, and it's all about them. It's not about, you know, you get Sue Perkins and Miriam Margolis go up the Orinoco. Well, you won't see.
I'd watch it.
Misses.
Yes, well,
somebody just written that in a margin of ITV, you know. You do realise that. You'll see no money for it, Martin.
That's a shame, isn't it? It was one of the more out there Wombles programmes. But anyway, I had to.
Yeah, it was a tap-in, wasn't it? It was Clive Allen from 5 Yards.
Very much so, very much so. No, I mean, but with Frank, and you'll know him because obviously you worked with him for years, you really do want to know those, you want to get his take on it, and he's clearly a huge fan. He starts off the show by saying, I love boxing, it's competition stripped down to absolute basics, and he talks about how he met Muhammad Ali briefly, and then he goes obviously to Louisville, Kentucky, where Muhammad Ali grew up in sort of almost what you'd call middle class circumstances. You know, it certainly looks probably classier than Oldbury in the West Midlands, to be honest. As Frank says, you know, Muhammad Ali's not a street fighter, you know, not tough. They always say you've got to be like a hungry boxer. He says, I'm not sure Ali was hungry, maybe slightly peckish, which was a great line. And then he goes on the Muhammad Ali tour. So you're sort of a little bit uncertain with these things because you think, well, these, it's almost like Disneyland, you know what I mean? Yeah. And these are people who I suppose. It's almost a career, isn't it, being Muhammad Ali rememberists, if you like. He obviously visits his brother, Rahman Ali, and talks about the famous story of him, of Ali throwing his gold medal in the Ohio River after a racist incident in Kentucky. One thing I didn't know, so a lot of it is familiar from other Ali documentaries, but it's good to get Frank Skinner's take on it. I didn't realise that Muhammad Ali was in a Black Power musical Broadway in 1969 called Buck White. Oh. And they had somebody from, 1969 musical, Buck White, Black. No, I've never heard of it. Apparently closed very soon. Apparently it was dreadful, as you might imagine. But, so that was one sort of new bit. There was a lot of stuff about, and I don't know whether you were familiar with the Paddy Monaghan story, the guy who wrote to Nixon about Muhammad Ali's, when he was imprisoned. Mm. And asking, and they became friends, Paddy Monaghan, who lived in a council house in Oxfordshire, which Muhammad Ali visited like about a dozen times. So there's, it's interesting. But
sounds good.
I'll download it
and watch it, certainly.
It's great. It really is good.
Frank's done some very good. He did a very good one on Elvis as well, another of his great loves, of course. And he does bring these to life. He's very good at them. So I shall check that out. You've also been watching Lennox Lewis this week, I understand.
Yeah, this is a long programme. It's a two-hour documentary on Sky Documentaries. Mm. Which again is quite good. I like this. Violet Lewis, his wife, obviously, describes Lennox Lewis as an onion.
Oh.
And I thought, well, that's interesting. I don't know why he was an onion. But
we're talking layers. Are we talking layers?
I think we're talking layers. Yeah. I think that's what she was talking
Violet
about.
His mother. His mother or his wife?
No, his mother begins with a V as well. It's Viola, his mother, I think. I can't remember the name. She's in the show as well. I mean, everybody you want to see is in the show. The history's there. There's some, there's lots of good boxing sequences in it. Mm-hmm. I was a bit upset they described Lennox as being born in the impoverished East End of London, but it's an American take on it.
Okay, it's the West Ham fan and you got upset about that, I take it.
I got a bit upset, the impoverished East. Yeah, I suppose at the time Lennox was born, obviously it was, and we hear about his childhood, which was very grim in the impoverished East End of London. Mm. 12 kids the mother had, the husband wasn't there, the dad turned up. It was quite a well-known story. He sort of turned up once, and Lennox saw him for about 5 minutes, and then he disappeared. Obviously, the mum went out to Canada to earn some money as a nurse. Mm. He was left with Miss Baker, who was, as he describes it, real mean, and she used to beat him and everything. It sounded awful. Wow. In and out of homes after that. I think she was hitting him, and then he just left, and he ended up in a variety of homes, and then went to Canada where, his potential was spotted, etc.
Sounds good.
He boxed a junior. It is good. Yeah. I thought Miss Baker, he described this dreadful woman who looked after him when his mum went to Canada as Miss Baker, and the only thing I could think of was Ma Baker, which was a song by Boney M.
They were both called Violet. His wife's called Violet, his mother's called Violet.
Wow.
And it's out of interest, I got this from Wikipedia, all his children are LLs.
Ah, OK. He's not quite gone down the George Foreman route. Just very quickly, Martin, we may be out of time. Do you want to leave this till next week? Because it deserves
leave
more
it till
time.
Next week.
Leeds
yeah,
United.
It's on Amazon Prime. It's a Leeds United doco, going back to when they went up from the second division into the first division. Obviously, the last champions of the first division.
We'll look at that in a bit more detail next week.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Just checking with Guy Swindles, watching the first test in Antigua. Guy.
England going along very steadily. We're in the 20th over of their second innings and they're 49-1. Zach Crawley's played really nicely. Possibly could have been given out. Well, he was given out before he had scored. He overturned that LBW shout on review and has now moved on to 32, including 5 excellent boundaries. Joe Root's looked pretty steady as well. He's gone on to double figures now. He's just reached 10. Moments ago, though, worrying moment. The ball kept very low as it shot past Joe Root's bat. He gave a grin at the time, but he won't be smiling if that one is actually on the stumps next time it happens. So just signs that the pitch is breaking up a little, but a solid start in their second innings for England. 49-1, 15 runs behind.
Thanks very much, Guy. Time then to bring you the non-sporting TV weekend, if you want to take in a bit of standard telly. And as always, Brighton supporting star TV columnist Mike Ward joins us. Good afternoon, Mike.
Afternoon, guys.
You entertain, as we say in football circles, the mighty Liverpool tomorrow, don't
you? Yes, I think it'll be a breeze.
Webster back here. That's been the problem for Brighton, hasn't it?
Well, there's been one of a number of problems. I don't think he is back. I think I'm going to do the old cliche of we'll raise our game, you know, against a team like Liverpool. It started off being a bad day at the office, didn't we? Talked about losing against Burnley. It's been a bad month at the office, and we all know what those are like. So
it's the first of the game day matches for us here on TalkSport from 12:30.
Yeah, nice early one. Yes. Hope it doesn't rain.
We're going to kick off then the non-sporting telly with the return of Grantchester.
Oh, I'm a fan.
You're a big fan?
I love Grantchester.
I do. Yeah, I think it's one of those dramas that gets the balance right, doesn't it, between the kind of the whimsical but not so sort of whimsical that it's twee and irritating, and the sort of slightly edgier murder mystery aspect, which doesn't, you know, go too far. Set in the 1950s, 1959, the story now. Robson Green and Tom Brittany playing his sleuthing vicar pal. And the story, the opening episode of this new one, Robson Green's character, D.I. Geordie Keith, he's got a new boss. And the new boss doesn't seem to quite understand why there's a vicar on the scene.
Tell him about Father Brown.
Yeah, exactly. He just doesn't have the hat. But yeah, it's a little confused, as you would be. But so that's obviously being setting us up for this slight conflict between Geordie and his new somewhat straight-laced jobs worth of a boss. So
excellent. Crufts is on, isn't it?
Yes.
I saw a bit of it last night.
Crufts.
You like Crufts?
I like the Sunday. I like the finals.
You really don't like the semi-finals. We're only interested in best in show.
Nobody remembers the losing dog in the semi-final, do they?
I do feel for them. You get down to the eight dogs. They had one last night, and then they go around, they walk up and shake the hand of the person. You know, those other four people. I wonder if they should bite the bloke. Of course not. I don't mean that.
Halfway through that sentence, you thought, oh, I'm not going to say that. Oh, no,
said I've said it. It's too late now. They won't, of course.
We quite like the sport as well. It's usually, is it Jim Rosenthal doing the commentary? Often does.
I don't think it is. No, it's not. Jim's not doing it.
And the fly ball. I love that. That's the relay, isn't it? That's the running.
Yeah, the sporty bits.
I'd like to try that. So, hilarious.
8 o'clock, Channel 4. Yeah. Day two. That's tonight, isn't it? Now, tomorrow, Killing Eve.
Yeah.
Episode 2 of The Fire. I mean, I've got to be honest, I gave up with this. I started watching.
I like it.
Andy's hardcore. He's going to watch it to the bitter end. But I gave up after midway series two, I thought.
I gave up after 10 minutes of last. I've always liked it, but. I'll just say one word, the cat.
Oh, okay.
Right, the cat. My wife said, right, that's it. I'm leaving there. I'm not watching this series ever again. And I have to say, there hasn't been any more than one episode. But she's never going to watch it again. I must admit, I was quite... But it's, you know, at a time when we get warnings about everything, you know, here are some distressing scenes, here are some violent scenes, here are some, you know, if you go on some of the streaming channels to get warnings of people smoking in programmes, but they never warn you about the animal thing.
I get genuinely
quite upset about that.
I found on Talking Pictures TV they're showing the old Rumpole of the
Yes, Bailey, very good.
They're fantastic. They really are. But they have so many warnings before the start of the show.
Yeah.
Yes, we know it was made in 1978.
Yeah, that's true. So that's Killing Eve 9:15 BBC One tomorrow. 9:15 Channel 5. Queens of Mystery. What's this?
Yeah, this is interesting. Oh, yeah. This has been on Acorn TV, the streaming service, for a couple of years. Channel 5 have now bought it up. It's a very sort of self-deprecating, tongue-in-cheek type of murder mystery. Sarah Woodward, Siobhan Redmond and Julie Graham play these three sisters who are sort of like crime writers who help their niece, who's a proper police detective sergeant, to solve various murders. They sort of think they know best because of their sleuthing experience or whatever. So there's a kind of conflict between the real person doing the job and the people who sort of base everything on their own fictional expertise. But it's very sort of... again, it's got that balance between sort of being whimsical and tongue-in-cheek, but not so much so that it drives you potty. And it's written by Julian Unthank, who is behind Doc Martin, New Tricks, and various other things. So if you like the kind of tone of that, This ticks the box.
And just time for one on Sunday, a new quiz show. Daro Breen has got a show called 1 and 6-0, 6 o'clock on Channel 4, but you could win £1 million.
You could. I suspect Good you're Lord. Probably not going to. I did actually try and watch a little bit of this last night, and I got distracted slightly, and I thought, well, hang on, what? So you lose a zero off the end of your pot of money if you get the question wrong, and then you add another zero, and that question's basically you're not going to win £1 million. I think that's the general gist of it. But technically, you could if you're a genius.
I've never really watched Danny Dyer's The Wall, but I just caught a bit of the end of it. Someone won $123,000 the other week.
Yeah, it was big money, as Max used to say. Yeah. And I wasn't sure whether I was going to watch 1 and 6-0 until your last line in this in the preview, where you say the first episode features a team from Durham.
Well,
that,
okay,
that was the clincher for me,
yeah,
Mike.
I thought that was do it.
Second you episode knew, is Chelsea fans hoping to win £1 million.
That was the clincher. Chris Deguna tells us Jim Rosenthal is commentating on Crufts again this year. I don't think I heard Jim's voice last night. Oh, I would have noticed.
No, he does the sport bit.
Oh, okay, right. Sport, yeah, I see. Thank you, Chris, for filling this in. So there's your non-sporting telly. Mike, enjoy the game tomorrow.
I will, very much so.
And we'll catch up with you next week. Thanks
very
much.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.